Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. I'm delighted today we're going back to the issue of public land, its use, what is the best way to develop it. A really, really important discussion right now in terms of how can the actual proposals in Housing for All, the new government's plan, actually be delivered in reality? How are they going to be delivered? We have a proposal in Housing for All to deliver up to 10,000 social homes per year, 2,000 cost rental, over 2,500 affordable homes. So how is it going to be delivered? And I think one really good example in practice is the issue of the public land of Oscar Traynor in North Dublin, which we covered on this podcast before. And Oscar Traynor, which we will discuss, is a really important site. It is a site owned by Dublin City Council. So the question is, what should be done? And as you might be aware, there was a plan developed previously, which involved half of the units that would have been developed on that site being sold by the private developer Glenveagh, who is Dublin City's council's partner, up to when councillors voted down that previous proposal on the basis that Dublin City councillors wanted 100% public affordable homes on that land, which is a very important principle. And I have today to discuss this, we have Emily Duffy, who is the former deputy director, deputy sheriff with the Uplift campaigning group and current member and still acting at large on the housing issue. And we also have Councillor John Lyons, who's a Dublin City Councillor, has been very active on this issue. And we have back to the pod as well, our almost resident at this point, architect, housing analyst, and the thorn in the side of the speculators in the housing market, Mel Reynolds. So I'm going to go to John first. Just John, maybe you could outline, because I suppose the reason why we're doing this podcast today, and Emily came to me with the prompt, was that there is a vote coming up next Monday. The deal, as Leisha Nealon highlighted in the Dublin Inquirer, an excellent article, is back on the table with Glenveagh, despite what the councillors sought. Where is the plan at the moment of what does it look like is going to be put to Dublin City councillors on Monday evening?
Yeah, Rory, it's a good question. Look, we are now a full year since we did reject the previous iteration of this plan. It was November 2020 when the officials came to us looking for us to transfer the 42-acre site on the Oscar Traynor Road to Glenveagh Living Limited. We did reject that deal, but not only did we reject that deal, Rory, we actually moved very quickly to formulate an alternative proposal, which was passed by the Housing Committee in January of this year and was endorsed by the full City Council in March of this year. In the 7 months since, the City Council officials have done nothing to progress our alternative proposal, which would have seen Dublin City Council not only retain ownership of the land, but actually lead in the design, the development and the delivery of affordable homes, social and affordable homes on that site. They did nothing for 6 to 7 months and they've come back to us, obviously having worked in the background, as they have said in a couple of reports, with Glenveagh, and I'm assuming the Department of Housing, Planning and Local Government. And they've come back with a alterated, but substantially the same proposal as we were faced with last year. And they've admitted that because they say that the original tender still stands. They haven't materially contravened it. And so what they're proposing is that Glenveagh would receive title deeds to the 42-acre site, that they would lead off and develop the site and deliver, they say, 853 units. And the breakdown would be, and this is where the officials think they have shifted significantly, that it's the same 10-year mix as our alternative proposal, which is 40% social homes, 40% cost rental, and 20% affordable porches. Now, to my mind, and I think Mel and Emily can come in on this a little bit later, how they are actually, when some of the figures that they've produced for us, and they still have yet to produce all of the answers to the questions that we submitted to them, how they're actually going to produce social homes that are actually of value, good value to the public purse, how they're actually going to achieve cost rental homes that are actually affordable for people to rent under the cost rental scheme, and how they're actually going to produce affordable purchase schemes when in each and every instance, the developer, Glenveagh, has to get their margin. It's they are distorting and contorting themselves in order to ensure that Glenveagh get their hands on that land. And to my mind, after a decade of, you know, lost social housing construction, to see the City Council still pursue this failed policy, this public-private partnership policy, and not actually have faith in itself as a local authority, as the largest local authority in the country, to actually take on a development like this. Because what they're saying to us, we just can't do this. We have to rely on the private sector. And what we're saying, those of us who advocate that public land should be used for public housing, they're saying, come on, but there has to be some point in time where we say we have a responsibility to deliver affordable housing for the people of Dublin. So let's go. We don't have much land left. Land is finite. Dublin City Council has a certain number of parcels of public land left. And this is one of the significant ones. And you know, I just think, you know, it's too important. The council officials, I think, Amel might come in on this a little bit later, but I think they are being very disingenuous in what they're saying to us, because when we look at what's happened with O'Devonley Gardens, they caveat everything that we had agreed by saying subject to planning permission. And the same line is in the report for Monday night's meeting, the disposal, the section 183, that everything that we are supposedly going to agree or disagree within this report is subject to planning permission, which means when we, let's say we were to vote in favour of it and to give Glenveagh the land, we then lose complete control of the development. In O'Devonley Gardens, Bartra Capital took 2 years, nearly two full years, to lodge a planning application. We were told that this was going to be the most efficient way to deliver housing. They sat on their hands for 2 years. Why? Because they were looking at market fluctuations. Nothing to do with COVID. Nothing to do at all with COVID restrictions. And I think the same thing could conceivably happen here again. We lose complete control. And then I think what could happen is that Glenveagh are going to seek a massive increase in the number of units on that site. And that, what will that mean? It will mean that they will perhaps get a huge percentage to sell themselves on the open market at unaffordable prices. That is one concern that some of us have. But look, I think mainly is that we have no faith that this proposal can actually be delivered by Glenveagh. It's not going to do what the officials say it's going to do. It's not going to deliver social homes at good value for money. It's most certainly not going to deliver cost rental homes, and it ain't going to deliver affordable purchase homes. The council has a responsibility and an obligation to seek a better proposal. And that's why I think a majority of councillors are going to reject the deal on Monday evening.
Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but this is one of those moments where I actually have to ask you, the listener, to help us keep these things going. Rebut Republic, Echo Chamber, Tortoise Shack itself is one platform that tries to have those conversations that you might not hear, or if you do hear, you don't hear them in the long form detail that we like to bring to the public. I think the work matters. I know we've helped shape conversations, and I know it has a value, but that value has to unfortunately be met by some sort of financial recompense, because we've bills to pay. It's as simple as that. This is not self-sustaining. We don't have ads. We don't have sponsors. And to be honest with you, most people probably aren't too keen on a left-leaning podcast network anyway. But the work matters. And so many people tell me that. I get so many messages every week about how they've been informed by something, entertained by something, or had their opinions challenged by something. So if you're one of those people and you're listening now, help us. It's a pint a month. It's a fancy coffee a month. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It helps us keep going. And I'd really appreciate if you put your hand in your pocket and joined us. Thank you.
It's very important, I think, this discussion, because we've had a lot of this thing thrown around at myself, at all of you as well, this thing that we're just objecting to housing development. And of course, it's really important to be able to question and criticize plans that are being proposed if they're not actually going to deliver affordable homes. And I think this is a really important point to get across, that it's not objecting to development, it's objecting to the type of development that is being proposed. And I really would like to ask Mel, and come in, Mel, if you could jot down these questions before. I'm going to get Emily in first, but one that I'd like to come back to you on is that question of, that I think John is posing quite well. What is in this for Glenveagh? If it is just developing all these affordable housing, well, what is in it for them? There must be something else there. And the question of why is the land being transferred? Why does the land have to be transferred to Glenveagh? And I think another interesting question is something that comes up, which I think the council have used as a justification, is that, well, Glenveagh will provide all these additional community facilities, the landscaping, you know, the green space that the Department of Environment doesn't fund when it delivers housing. And so this whole issue of the how do we cost housing per unit? And we don't include all that additional, you know, what do you call, you know, the placemaking in the cost of housing and the cost of delivering. And that there's somehow this is the council trying to get around that. And I think that's an important question. Emily, from your perspective, what are your kind of concerns around the plan as proposed? It is clear, I think, that there's been a very big shift from the original plan, which is an achievement of the campaigning that has been done by Uplift and the work done by other councillors, which is important to acknowledge. This is an improvement on what was proposed the last time. But what's wrong, do you think, with what we think is going to happen or being proposed at the moment?
Sure. So I think, like, to start off with around the campaign and what Uplift, I mean, when Uplift campaigns, it's basically just a proxy for saying that hundreds and thousands of people in Dublin have been taking action on this campaign, that there is a kind of like a democratic grassroots upheaval around this, and that people are really starting to take a very strong and passionate interest in how our public land gets used and in how our local democracy functions. And so for me, my main concern around this deal, and I'm sure John and Mel can talk about the details more, but it's that for me, I'm extremely concerned about local democracy, the strength of our local democracy. That's my main concern, and the strength of the of people of Dublin City to be able to make the decisions about how land gets used. And what's quite clear to me is that there is a very heavily ideologically driven force in Dublin City Council that is just explicitly pro-privatisation. And it's not necessarily that they can't fight for the funding from national government to develop the land publicly. It's not that they haven't tried in any real way to look at developing this land publicly, that there is an ideological drive there that it is in opposition to a very democratic force, a grassroots, hundreds and thousands of people in Dublin City taking action, councillors stepping up and doing the right thing and listening to their constituents, voting against a deal that they know isn't going to deliver, voting for a deal that will deliver, and then being told that they have to go back to the drawing board, that this isn't possible. And so my main concern is, like, we're in a crisis about how decisions get made in our city, and it's massively undemocratic and in some ways potentially corrupt. And so that's my main concern is around the democracy of it. Around the deal itself, I think the main thing is we were told on O'Devany Gardens that we had gotten a better deal. I think councillors were duped into believing that they had fought and gotten a better deal. And I think that there probably isn't that institutional memory there in the council, because there's new councillors since the O'Devany deal, and they don't realise that the exact same thing is happening again, that they've been told that there will be 100% public homes. We saw some councillors tweet the other day, it will be 100% public homes, but that's not the case. A private developer, if they've been given title deeds to land to develop for profit, that is not public homes. That is private home. That's privatisation of public land and a wealth giveaway of public wealth to private hands. And so that's my main concern as well, is that we cannot trust a gentleman's agreement. And it's literally, they've literally said that it's going to be a gentleman's agreement with this property developer. We've seen in O'Devany Gardens, some of those units don't even meet daylight standards by planning. And so Bartra completely went back on what they said that they would deliver, as they do. You know, I mean, ducks quack, property developers make profits. And I think that it would be, It's concerning me to see councillors who want to do the right thing, who want to vote for public homes, who believe that they're doing the right thing by trying to deliver homes for people, being bullied and duped into voting for something because they're being told that there's no other option. And that actually is 100% coming from an ideology around privatisation. And it's also coming from a willful distaste for democracy, I would say, at Dublin City Council level, which is really, really worrying. And I think that that's going to see more and more spaces open up where people aren't going to engage with elected politicians, because it seems
Emily, just on, like, they lost the vote, but they're ignoring.
Yeah.
No, in preceding this, yeah. Like, the one question, is it not anti-democratic?
Absolutely.
And secondly, you know, the campaign has delivered a compromise, in a sense, supported by the current Lord Mayor. But the question is, you know, as you say, if the developer is essentially given, which it will be, given the transfer and control of the lands, it hands control of the project over to the developer. And the council is then essentially following the developer's lead after that and trying to, as you say, through a gentleman's agreement, influence it somehow. But we've seen with O'Devany, as you say, what has happened. That the question is, was there any move made to go to the Department of Housing and say, you know, bring the plan that was proposed for 100% public housing? What was the reaction back from the Department of Housing and the Minister on that? Because what we've been told is money is no object. You know, anything will be, you know, if it's public housing on public land, it will be developed.
So maybe John can come back in on this, but as far as I know, the Minister was invited to meet with the Dublin City Councillors and he didn't come. His line on this is he wants Oscar Traynor developed as quickly as possible. And, you know, that I think the message to him is, well, then pony up. You know, he could deliver, even if he was to take it into his new land development agency and do it that way, like, which I think that the council should be empowered to build, like, that is that the money should be given to councils to build. But he's washed his hands off it, as far as I can see. I don't know if John wants to come in more on that, and that he's quite happy for the kind of row to happen at Dublin City Council level and then blame parties who vote against this deal for blocking housing, or especially parties who are in opposition for blocking housing being built. And that's the spin.
Yeah. Mel Reynolds, in terms of your analysis of, because you've been analysing this for quite a while, obviously you did the analysis of the original O'Devany Gardens proposal and the barter proposal around the value for money question of this and what is the state actually getting. But first of all, from your analysis, why would Glenveagh still be involved if they're just providing affordable housing? They're not a builder, they're a developer.
Well, it's a remarkably good deal for them to get involved with. When you look at the figures, it's very, very lucrative. And similar to the O'Devany model, the reason why I looked at O'Devany was because it struck me as that was going to be the model, excuse me, for a lot of state land and possibly the LDA, this sort of PPP model. So they're very, very profitable, and you're effectively getting hold of a very large land bank at a really significant discount in a very well-located Dublin area. So it's all about the land. I mean, these sort of deals happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago in the UK, where local authorities in the UK effectively handed over land at really, really low cost to private industry to build out, decanted tenants out of communities and handed over these areas to be developed. So it's a very similar, we've seen all this before in the private sector. So when you look, it's really when you objectively look at the actual deals and the numbers, you see how good a deal it is.
Did you have crunched?
Well, yeah, if you have a few minutes, I'll go through some of the figures.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I had a look at the O'Devany one before, but I set that to one side and just looked at this from first principles. And I got as much information we have on the deal at the moment. So, I mean, basically you've got the agreement at the moment is 853 residential units on about 17.4 hectares, which is a lot of land. Like, that's 43 acres of land. So there's three basic components to this. It's the site value is number one. The second one is the build cost. So what sort of premium are you paying a developer rather than a builder to build out? And are there any extra costs there, like, for example, private sector financing? And then the last one is what additional subsidies, if any, are required to bring the costs down? Because as we know, like, cost rental is a term, it's an aspiration. If your costs are too high, your rents are going to be too high.
Yeah.
So if your target rent is at a level well below where you're at, and I think the housing agency did a very interesting analysis of cost rental in December, and their conclusion was that cost rentals, even when you're getting units at a significant discount, require significant other subventions to get to these levels of below 1,500 euros a month, which is quite high. So just looking at this figure here, in terms of the site value, what I just looked at was this. So the two models here, you have a high density and a low density model. Let's assume that the 853 units that are being delivered to DCC are in one section of the site. O'Devany Gardens at the moment has a density of 200 units per hectare. So that would suggest on this site could accommodate 3,500 dwellings, which is a lot. I think that's a bit over the top. So for the first model, I said, let's assume we go for a high density scheme on this. 150 units per hectare gives you over 2,500. and two beds will sell for €392,000. That's the figure that's in this deal. So I think that's probably a modest figure for private housing to be sold here at. So that, roughly speaking, when you do your valuer's residual model on that, site value is €30,000 a site. That puts the entire site, I think at around 78 million, something like that. I think DCC valued it at 44. But critically, the portion that's being retained by the developer, which is, you know, you have your 2,600 units in total, 853 are being sold or given to Dublin City Council in whatever the percentage you're having yourself. But 1,700 units by 30,000 is about 52.7 million. So that's the first number you get when you do that. So Glenveagh are, my understanding is they're buying the site for 14. So you have a site discount there. Is they're effectively getting a site discount of 38 million. So that's the first benefit they're getting out of it. If you look at a more moderate low density scheme, which I think is closer towards the one that was tabled to councillors, what you probably do is you stuff all your DCC units in higher blocks on a corner of the site, which is what they've done. And then you'd spread out low density housing, two or three stories, duplexes and two and three beds on the balance of the site, which looks like the scheme that was presented to councillors. The interesting thing about that is if you're selling, say, a three-bed house for 450,000, which is a reasonable sales price in that location at the moment, is your site value is 95,000 a unit when you put it through the residual calculation. So one house site is the equivalent of three apartment sites in terms of land value. So on the basis of that, if you take a density of, say, 80 units per hectare, now 80 units per hectare for people looking at it is the same as Goldsmiths Reef, which was the Sterling prize winner last year. It was social housing in the UK done to passive standard, and there were sort of 2 to 3 story stony batter type development, really, really high quality development for social housing. So on this model, DCC still get the 853 units. They're in 4 to 6 stories. Then they get to keep the site for about, I think, 539 dwellings, say 540 dwellings, 2 to 3 stories on the rest of the site. The site value there is 539 by 95 is 51 million. So they're paying 14 for it. So your discounted price in a moderate density scheme there is 37 million. So that's the first thing that Glenveagh are getting, is they're getting a site worth about 51 million for 14.
Yeah.
So that's a hard answer to your first one.
It is. No, it's a very good answer. I think you framed it very well, explained it very well, Mel. Just a brief, before I go back to you, question to John. In the presentation of all the figures I have seen, I have not seen the presentation of the figure that Mel has put there, where you're talking about potentially 1,300 units going in on the site, and that the 800 units are separate. So all the talk is about these 800 units, rather than actually what Glenveagh are getting, which is potential to build, as Mel has said, between 1,300 to 1,200 units, and the 800 are only a part of that. That in actual fact, Glenveagh are getting much, much more.
Yeah, look, and this is a real prospect, because the former project manager for the Oscar Turner Road Housing Land Initiative in Dublin City Council, on the meetings of the local consultative forum that I sit on the Oscar Turner Road, which we pushed to have established before we actually agreed the previous iteration of the deal, he very assuredly informed us over 2 years ago that the minimum units would be about 1,000 plus, because they'd have to actually maximise the density of the site. And they seem to have rolled back on that in the last few months, where they're now sticking very clearly to the 853. But if you look down the road at the controversial Chivers site, and what they were, it's a 3.86 hectare site, and they were granted permission for 550 units, apartments. So that's a density of 142, I think it is. Mel might be able to do the maths there.
Yeah.
So look, this is a prospect when we have one city council official who has since retired, who was responsible for guiding the Oscar Traynor Road project through the various stages of the process, saying to us that, yes, it'll be at least 1,000. And you now have the officials telling us, no, we're going to stick to the 853. That then means once we transfer the title deeds to Glenveagh, if it was to happen, and then when Glenveagh formulate their planning application, it'll go to Dublin City Council as the planning authority, because it's now the new large-scale residential development. It won't be an SHD to onboard Pranala, but we've lost control of it. Now, with O'Devany Garden, the increase in units was proportionate to the tenure mix. So any increase in the units was divided up between the social and the cost rental and the affordable. That could happen in this instance, but we don't know, Rory, and this is the problem. With O'Devany Gardens, some councils had to sign a confidentiality agreement to actually view the development agreement between Dublin City Council and Bartra. I have asked, and I'm sure many other councils have asked, to see the development agreement between Dublin City Council and Glenbeigh Living Limited. We haven't seen it yet. It's only a few days to go before the vote. We have asked to see the agreement between Glenbeigh and Clwyd, the approved housing body, who are going to be in charge of the cost rental units. We haven't seen that. We have no detail as to what Mel has raised and what you have asked. We actually cannot confidently, as public representatives, answer questions that our constituents have. At a very basic level of professionalism, it would be an abdication of our responsibilities to ensure that we're transparent and that we're actually diligent in our work. And to be voting on such a serious piece of land and such a serious issue without all that information to hand, last year was the same issue, and again we're having the same issue again, and I just don't see how anyone who was right-thinking, whether they're left-wing, right-wing, or in the extreme centre, could actually do it without all that information.
I agree. I think that's an important point, John. Mel, just to go back to you a minute. In terms of that, that's, as I said, a really important piece of analysis. Have you any other, in terms of, for you, kind of are jumping out about the figures around this and the question of value for money for the state and what it's doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, your other question, what's in it for Glenbeigh? I mean, I'm pro-development. I'm not anti-private investment at all. What I am worried about is areas where you get distortions of the market due to the state coming in, putting incentives in place that are distorting the market for everyone else. But like the second, I suppose that the site is subvention is one thing. If you look at the build costs here, which is the second component, you know, at a sales price of €392,000, when you put that in a standard sort of residual calculator, you work out that the premium being paid to Glenbeigh over and above costs, including financing, professional fees, levies, etc., is about $50,000 per unit. So that's the fee they're charging, which is about right in terms of a margin, you know, for financing that you'd need to get in the private sector. So that's just when you use a developer to do a scheme, you're going to pay that. That's where you're going to be in terms of paying over the odds. But in that also, there's an additional cost for financing that state wouldn't necessarily have. So as a comparison, what we do know is the costs for local authorities to build directly. Now, one thing difficulty we have is Dublin City Council are way out there. They're 30% higher than the three other local authorities. So I think the way that they're building homes needs to be looked at. They build on average about 122 new homes a year, including Priory Hall refurbs over the past 4.5 years. So they're building very low numbers in a very particular way that's very expensive. But if you take the average build cost and index it up for inflation of the other three local authorities, Dunleary, South Dublin and Fingal, they should be paying about $325,000 per unit all in, including VAT, site, levies, everything, to build a two-bed apartment. So it looks as if the difference between what they should be building at and what they're being charged here is around $68,000 per unit. So that makes sense when you look at the premium the builder will be charging, about 50 to 51, and a financing cost of 18. But it's a significant cost when you multiply it out by 853 units. But I suppose the other cost to the exchequer is further subventions when these things are built. We do know the social are just going to take it on the nose, so there's no subvention. We know that for the affordable rental, based on the housing agency analysis, I suspect it's probably 70,000 a unit. But in this instance, even if you say it's 25,000 a unit is put in as an initial subsidy to bring the rents down to 1,500 for a two bed, that's 8.6 million by, that's 25 by 341. And then for the affordable, we know the subvention is going to be 100,000 a unit. So that's 100,000 per unit by 171 is 17.1 million. So that's an additional 25.7 million. So when you look at the value for money to the exchequer, which is just objectively looking at it, you're saying your extra over build cost, which is your premium of say 68,000 per unit, is 58 million. Your subvention for your site, which is the discount you're giving your developer for the balance of the site that he's building on, is 37. And then also you have further subventions, which are very conservative, of about 26 million. So that's 121 million euros extra you're paying. So per unit, that works out at about a little over 140,000, which again, looking back on the Society Chartered Surveyors, they looked into the typical cost of houses and apartments. And back in January 2020, they quoted a figure of the saving that the local authorities or the state can have over a sales price if they procure directly, if they employ a builder rather than a developer, is between 140 and 160,000 euros. So the numbers are sort of about right. So that's a lot of money. So, I mean, one way that you could do this here, now I'm not suggesting this is the way to do it, is if you do the same deal, but just sell the site and ring fence that to pay for your 853 units and part pay it. So if you were to do the same thing, instead of selling the site for 14, sell it for 51 million. On the open market and say away you go and have it exempt from part five, etc. You can then take 60,000 and take it off your build cost of 325. So all of a sudden, your cost to the state to build a typical two bed drops from 392, which is the purchase price here, down to 325. And then you take 60 from your site sale and you're down at around 264,000 euros. So if you're looking at that, straight away, like a 30-year mortgage at 2% is about 940 euros. Brilliant. So you're, without any further subventions, your costs drop to a level where you don't need any further state subvention on it. The projected rental in this deal for a studio unit, I think, is about 920 euros. Yeah. So with just rearranging the pieces in a different way and doing the direct procurement and leveraging the site value, you can get a lot cheap unit. But I suppose for the point of view, the difficulty for councillors and politically here is, how are you going to object to units if and when the developer goes in for 2,000 on the site? You can't really, because it's a housing crisis, but you lose the benefit of it. You know, what we're really saying here is, if you're paying 140,000 plus more per unit, you're getting two homes for the price of three. And on this site, if the government wanted to, they could hold on to the site and sell 500 affordable purchase units for 320. You know, we know the three beds are going for 450. You could actually, at no extra cost, the state could build, do direct procurement, or do the Oculon model. And there's a margin there. All those site values exclude developers' profit. So there's a margin in those figures. So,
but you wouldn't even
you're losing 30% of your units that could be affordable purchase for ordinary purchasers. You're losing them. So it's a complete, you're starting off with a land asset worth about 78 million. And you're ending up with a bill for 121. So it's incredibly, just from a development point of view, it's actually a really destructive deal in terms of your equity you're starting out with.
No, and I think they're really, really important points. And even to push you a little bit further, I know, you know, you're suggesting you would sell half the site, but you could retain the full site and develop it, you know, in part, you know, with builders.
That was my point there, is if you don't sell the site, your units are going to cost you, or your dwellings are going to cost you 325. So you're 68,000 cheaper from the get-go. And if you decide to sell affordable homes there, you could sell them at 350, and you're still 100,000 euros cheaper. So you're making, the state could make 25,000 per unit back if they wanted to, just by selling on. And don't forget, like, every affordable sale you do is really, that shouldn't be costing you anything, because you're selling that on at cost. In this PPP model, what you're doing is each sale is costing you 100,000 euros in shared equity. So your cost is too high before you start. So, it's a really, probably the most alarming thing about this is the fact that it's pro-cyclical. It's like the old PPPs, Rory, that you're very familiar with.
Yeah.
It's all based on, if the sales price in the market drops here, the balance of this site isn't going to be built out. Those 500 units aren't going to be built for years. And what you're probably going to have is a highly dense, social and affordable corner of the site built out with 850-odd units, or 400 or 500 units, and the rest of the site will be tumbleweed for years. And you won't see any of the infrastructure done, any of the community stuff done, for a long time. And eventually the state will probably have to step in and finish out. And that effectively what happened back in 2010 is we ended up with, I think about 2,500 affordable homes and a bill of 350 million that nobody wanted to buy because the market crashed. So the difficulty with this is, as a strategy, it's sort of a PPP pro-cyclical strategy. And I think there's a lot of questions here that councillors would need to get answers on before they voted on it. Your other question about why are they transferring the site, I think that's a practical issue because you'll find that any private developer will find, even Oculon will find it difficult to get financing unless a lender has an asset to use as security. So that's just the practicalities of it. But again, what happens is the minute it's transferred over, who's to say, you know, John mentioned the Chivers site there. I mean, the minute that you've no control there, you know, you've absolutely no control. So effectively, and how do you argue against somebody going back in for 2,500 dwellings on it if they want to really max it out? So, I mean, the name of the game here from the private sector is get the land as cheaply as possible, pay the least in advance, and which is fine. It's a brilliant deal. My God, there's loads of people I know to give the right arm to do a deal like it. But effectively, it's the same sort of model that's been used in Ardevenny, which is, it's one way of doing it. But between Ardevenny Gardens and here, if you think about the number, if you're losing 30% of your, if you're paying 30% more, you're losing one unit out of three. So you're probably seeing the loss of, I don't know, maybe 800 or 900 dwellings on the two sites, just in the way that they're structuring this deal. So if somebody says to you, I mean, if you talk to somebody like Orla Hegarty, who's a specialist in procurement, there's a number of different ways you can structure deals that work in the private sector. This is a particularly destructive way to lose any value in your site. And I think possibly in terms of mindsets, there's probably a perception there that DCC just want to get rid of the land, that it's an embarrassment, and they don't value it because the councillors won't let them do anything, and they can't sell it, and they can't build on it because the department will take years to get permission off the department or approvals off the department to build. So I think there's a bit of that going on. But certainly if somebody says to you, this is the only way you can do it, that's absolute rubbish. I mean, there's loads of ways. And in actual fact, the way to do this would be to a better way. And again, Orla Hegarty has mentioned this, is get DCC to do your master plan, get your densities and your community spaces right. Break it. Limerick Regen are doing this all over the place down in Limerick. So get your master plan right, break your site up into smaller pieces and tender out blocks of 50 or 60 houses and apartments to different builders, and you'll get competitive tendering. If you're doing a PPP at this level, how many entities can, maybe four or five, they all know each other. So you're going to get you're not going to get any competition where people know each other. So if you want to stimulate competition, get the hold control on it, is hold onto the site and tender it. And you have, that's recession proof as well. If you're building at 320, 310, 320, if prices drop 10%, you're fine. It's still viable. Yeah. So they just, but I don't think there's any appetite to do direct builds. And this, unfortunately, is distorting the entire market because it's so lucrative.
Yeah. Well, listen, Mel, that's a brilliant analysis and so important that we do get that out there. I think it really, we need to go through that level of detail, and I appreciate you giving your time to go through that because it is so important. I'm going to give last word to Emily. Emily Duffy, in terms of that question, two questions to you. Firstly, the question of, well, really, you know, we need to get homes built as quickly as possible, and therefore this deal should be supported, even though it's not ideal. And secondly, how do you see the kind of the campaigning going over the next couple of days, and what do you think people can do, and what would you call on people to do?
Great. Well, first of all, I'd say the bit is definitely between people's teeth. At the moment, I haven't seen people quite as mobilized around this in a long time. So to address the first question around that talking point that, like, we won't see homes built on the land for a long time, and I think that a lot of councillors are acting in what they believe is good faith to try and deliver for their constituents, and they are meeting people every day who are dealing with the very, very sharpest edges of the housing crisis. One thing that I will say to those councillors is that the people that you are meeting who are in need of publicly built, publicly funded homes will not be served by this Oscar Traynor Road deal. They just won't be served by it, as we've heard the figures there. And what I would also say is that what's directly to councillors who are considering what way to vote on Monday, is that the structure of Dublin City Council is that councillors are there to make decisions and represent the people of Dublin City, and the executive is there to implement those decisions. And what we have seen is an entirely upside down approach by an ideologically driven Dublin executive who want to dispose of the land, as Mel has said, who do not have the ambition or the will to want to develop the way that they developed back in the 60s and 70s, which is just build homes for people because public homes are for public good. And what I would say is that councillors really need to hold the line. Like, if we're in a battle around public homes in the city, if we're in a battle for state policy shifting more towards building public homes directly, then councillors are there right at that line. And while they're being bullied and browbeat and threatened with homes not being built on that land for a long time, what I say is that the people of Dublin City are behind you. We can see through what the executive are doing. And we want to say about the biggest land bank in our city, and we want to develop publicly and truly affordable homes. 1,500 quid a month is not affordable. 900 quid a month for a studio apartment is not affordable. We want truly affordable homes that are recession proof and that are built solely for the public good. In terms of where the campaign is going to go over the next couple of days, it's going to be pretty heavy. We've got people are making phone calls to councillors. We're going to be on, there'll be a lot of things happening on social media. I know there's a protest at the weekend as well. People are watching very, very closely. And I know that a lot of people are pledging that, look, I won't be voting for a councillor who votes to sell off our land and who doesn't do their due diligence around this deal and see through what is happening with the executive and truly fight. And I would also say that I think there has to be a bit of a joy of joining up by those opposition parties and campaigners and people on the ground around bringing this fight directly to the minister. And I think that is the next step in this campaign. If the vote is no on Monday, is to bring it directly to Dara O'Brien and say, listen, with a flick of a pen, this 43 acres could be in a very different position, that we can be ambitious around public homes and building truly affordable cost rental and social homes. That's what I would say, is that Oscar Traynor is the front line in the battle right now around housing policy. And for councillors to hold their ground and to not cede and not be bullied into thinking that they'll be blamed for not getting homes being built, basically.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks to Mel Reynolds and John Lyons for coming on today at short notice and giving their input and analysis. And I think it is so important that the point being that once the land is gone, it's gone, and this development. And I think there is so much to be learned from what happened in O'Devany Gardens that should be sending, warning signs and warning bells to people as to what could happen. I think, Mel, I really hope people take the time to listen to what you set out there, Mel. I think it's really, really important that we consider the whole site and what the Glenveagh are likely to do. And while people might get wooed by the lovely Glenveagh ads that are appearing all over the city now with Glenveagh being the space to live and the wonderful places they're constructing. And you would make you think, are they trying to convince people of something? But I do think
protest too much. Point,
the what, Emily?
They protest too much.
Exactly. Yes, yes, they indeed. I don't, Mel, did you want to go back in there briefly?
No, I think, you know, for any developer who wants to get in there, well, you go and do it. But I don't know why the state is giving away the land at such a huge discount and not using that to reduce their subsidies at the back end. So you're paying more, you're paying a premium, you're giving away your asset, and you're paying massive subventions at the back end of this. Like, I can't see any, deeper would really need to have a look at this way that they're structuring land.
Yeah.
You need an independent, proper economic analysis of this before they proceed with this at scale. I mean, really, it's incredibly destructive. I mentioned this to a developer I know, and I said, can you think of a way where you'd start off with a land asset worth 70 million and end up with a bill for 120? And he shook his head and he said, how can you do it? And I said, well, Dublin City Council are managing to do that at the moment. So in terms of value for money, I can't see where the benefit is here. The time scales are going to be the same. Any developer who goes in here is going to be employing a builder, the same builder, the same sets of builders to build out. So that the time scale for planning is local authorities can get planning through their own mechanisms faster. than private sector developers can. So I don't see what the benefit is of doing this at arm's length. I cannot see why are we paying more than 140,000 to do this at arm's length. I can't see. And what you're doing is you're leaving all those, the balance of units, whatever it is, if you get 1,600 on the site, 500,000 or whatever, the potential for affordable housing there, rentals or units for purchase, is gone because they will be prone to market forces. And it may, if we're at the end of a cycle here, they may not be built here. So it's a real opportunity lost. And every affordable house that's sold, it will not add to the government debt. You know, it recoups its finance. So it's a revolving fund. So there's really, fiscally, there's no reason why this shouldn't be done. But I think as a matter of urgency, based on these two deals, DEEPR needs to step in here. The Department of the Taoiseach can say, listen, we need to audit this and see where this is going.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a very important point. John, you wanted to come in there, or your child did, one or the other. I don't mind.
No, look, I just think it's important because locally, the Lawrence Lands, which that site's known as, has obviously been lying idle for 40 years. And there is a notion out there, and it is the threat that the officials put to us, that it will remain idle if we don't vote for this plan. But I think it's important for people across the city and for people locally to know that's just not acceptable. It's 42 acres of prime public land, and that we need, like we most assuredly need, to reject the deal on Monday evening. But from that point on, as Emily has rightly pointed towards, we need a massive campaign because, look, it's, you know, we could really deliver affordable housing in huge numbers on that site and make a massive difference to our housing list in Area B. It's the longest one in the city and could make a real, tangible, massive benefit to people's lives by delivering social and affordable homes on that site transform their lives. So, look, from Monday evening, when we hopefully will reject that deal, it is about coming together the different forces who are interested in seeing an ending to this housing crisis to ensure that we actually do develop that site in a time that's appropriate in terms of within the next year or two to actually have people moving into their homes on that site. It's achievable. We just need to create the political will at a national and a local level.
Yeah, and absolutely. And just to second that and just say that, of course, we can do this. You know, and O'Coolan, as Mel has pointed out and Orla have pointed out, easy that site could be divided up. We could build local authority homes, housing association homes, O'Coolan, get builders in. It does not have to be done this way. And I think that is the most, disingenuous of all this, that this is the only way to do it. It is absolutely not. And I do hope councillors reject this on the basis of what we've seen anyway and heard on Monday, and if people can contact their councillors, do contact your councillor and say you want 100% affordable public housing on this land, which is what we want. So listen, thanks again to Mel, to Emily and to John and our listeners. If you are interested, we are having a live show on November the 10th in the Sugar Club, where we will have all the hosts of the Tortoise Shack platform, myself, Tony, all the rest of the gang will be there, and it should be good fun. There'll be lots of discussion around housing and other issues. We're going to have a great night. So please, if you're interested, do come along. And that is November the 10th. You can get your tickets from Eventbrite. And as always, we thank you, patrons, as listeners who are supporting us to keep the lights on. I had a chat to Tony recently about how challenging it is to keep this podcast going. It's not just a hobby. And you can go over and have a listen to that, keeping the mics on that podcast. But if you can, if you are a patron, we really appreciate it. If you're considering it or would like to, please go over to tortoiseshack.com. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Become a patron, a supporter, sign up for the price of a cup of coffee a month, and it would help us keep going with these podcasts, which are absolutely vital. So listen, Tony does all the editing, the production, all that work. So listen, thank you so much to Tony again for keeping it going, and thank you to listeners, and hopefully we will get some progress on this housing. So we'll talk to you all soon.